When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent, match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
All right, it's a Wednesday morning. You're listening to the Mark Cox Morning Show. Happy that you're with us. We've got the show live up on the socials this morning. You can join us on the Facebook feed for sure, being sure to interact with people on there and respond and take their questions for some of our guests this morning. Got a couple of good ones coming up. We're going to talk to Taylor Riggs of the Big Money Show. The report due out today on interest rates and with the cut, they're expecting a quarter point cut. What's that going to mean? So we'll get to Taylor here the bottom of the hour. We've also got Mark Harder coming up from St. Louis County Council. Boy, somebody alerted me to this last night and I tuned in. I'm going to let you hear some of the audio in a minute, but how dirty politics is in St. Louis County these days. Honestly, you know, oftentimes you assume it happens. You don't always hear about it. When you have somebody testifying publicly in front of a committee that the county executive was trying to influence the outcome of an election by digging up dirt, it's just unseemly is what it is. And that's what we heard last night at this county council meeting. I've got some of that sound coming up for you here in just a couple minutes. We want to be sure that we wish Kim St. Ange a happy birthday.
Thank you.
Graced us with her presence this morning. Carl and I are flowering her with food and and donuts and McDonald's and all that good stuff. So
I feel really healthy this morning.
You should. We're just looking out for you. You know what I'm saying?
I asked you what you wanted, and you refused to say.
I really genuinely, you know I love a good McDonald's sandwich. You know I love donuts. I very much appreciate you guys doing that.
We've got you covered. Don't you worry. And then you can take the whole week off for your birthday next week.
Perfect.
See? All you have
and
to do
Jesus
is ask.
Jesus' birthday.
Oh, yeah. That one, too.
Who is that?
Some guy who was actually born in March.
Oh, yeah. You're right. He was not. You're right. He was not born in December.
They don't know that for sure, do they? But anyway, tradition. That's tradition. Anyway, we're going to get to all that for you here in just a couple of minutes. Remember, you can always download the podcast a little later on the Odyssey app or wherever you download your podcast. You can take it with you. You can stream it on the Odyssey app. Carl, let's get to our top stories.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
I received a phone call from someone on behalf of Dr. Page asking me to find dirt on Mike Archer.
Yeah, that's some of the testimony last night at the county council meeting. Page was sitting there when she testified to this, and she claimed that was Melissa Price Smith. She's the governor's pick to take over the prosecutor's office. So there's some nasty intrigue going on in county politics.
The county executive needs to stop playing on the emotions of our seniors when it comes to anytime he wants something.
Yeah, that's Mark Carter. We're going to get him on here live in a few minutes. But he was also going after the county executive because of the threats to strip poor seniors of their property tax freeze if he didn't get what he wanted on the budget. That's how that went down. Listen to this.
Look, everybody understands the necessity. It is not palatable. This is the sausage-making part of legislation that nobody likes, but we're governing, and we'll pick it up in January and start a brand-new day for America.
Yeah, nothing to see here. That is House Speaker Mike Johnson, who just made a deal with the devils, I mean the Democrats, to pass a budget deal that not just continues spending, it just adds a paltry $200 billion.
It's a total dumpster fire. I think it's garbage. This is what Washington, D.C. has done. This is why I ran for Congress to try to stop this. And sadly, this is happening again.
Yep, that's Congressman Eric Burleson from here in Missouri. A lot of people up there are angry about it. Chip Roy, Ralph Norman, Eric Burleson, a lot of people who are in the conservative caucus are pretty disgusted. Republicans are on the cusp of having power of both houses of Congress. And they're not willing to go to the mat over this issue. I fail to understand it. This morning, Mike Johnson's been doing a speaking tour to try to explain what's going on. Now, there hasn't been a vote yet. They have a 72-hour rule. They get 72 hours to look at 1,400 pages of budget nonsense. Have you looked at one of these, Kim?
No.
It's maddening is what it is. You almost have to have a staffer and an attorney with you as you read it, because oftentimes it's not just a bill that says, hey, guess what? We're going to spend $200 billion on this. We're going to spend $100 billion on that. We're going to spend $1 million on this. We're going to spend $2 million. It's not like that. What it is like an addendum to something that's already been passed. And without knowing what was originally passed, you're not quite sure what the addendum does. So then you got to go back and look at that. I mean, imagine getting through 1,400 pages of this in time to actually take a considered vote on it. I'm not even sure how they do it.
But we have to pass the bill so that you can find out what is in it.
Yeah, the point, Nancy, was to give them a 72-hour waiting period so their staffers would have a chance to go through and see some of the pork that's in these bills. This is why we're in the shape we're in. And it's maddening to me. Hopefully we have a Republican who might stand up and try to block this on the Senate side. And just let's see if they're willing to stay there through Christmas. Somebody's got to be willing to be the Grinch here.
You know they won't.
I'm afraid they won't. Here's what Johnson said this morning. They asked him, so what does Donald Trump think about this? Because, of course, he's going to push Doge. Elon Musk, Vivek are working on this. Mike Johnson claims he's even been in contact with all of them through this, and they understand, even if you don't.
Yeah, well, I was in constant contact with President Trump and his team, the chief of staff, and all the domestic policy advisors. They know exactly what we're doing and why. And I was on a text chain last night with Elon and Vivek about Doge, because I'm super excited about that. And I said, guys, these are the necessary things. They don't like spending either. They said, we know this is not you personally, Mr. Speaker, and we got to get through this. So, look, everybody understands the necessity. It is not palatable. This is the sausage-making part of legislation that nobody likes. But we're governing. And we'll pick it up in January and start a brand new day for America.
It's never too early to learn that the government is a greedy piglet that suckles on a taxpayer's teat until they have sore chapped nipples.
Yeah, go ahead and get some Vaseline out because I think you're going to need it. $200 billion in additional spending. This is why people like Chip Roy say this is not a continuing resolution. It's an omnibus bill. If a bill gets bigger, you're not just continuing spending, you're adding to the spending. And that's part of the problem we have here. Go ahead and play cut eight, Carl, please.
I mean, just swamp's going to swamp, right? 1,400 pages, still haven't seen the text. Multiple subject matters. Important healthcare legislation in the context of extenders piled on the back of a three-month CR with about $110 billion unpaid for. $25 billion of healthcare policy, half of which is fake pay for, being sold that is pay for, because they're gimmicks and shuffling around the decks. Things like E15, which we didn't even have a full debate on. This is not the way to do business. The conference needs to decide whether we're actually serious about spending. And they talk about, well, we got to do mandatory spending reform and bend the curve. But we just voted on a $200 billion shift of dollars in Social Security that's going to shorten the time when Social Security expires or goes bankrupt. We're just fundamentally unserious about spending. And as long as you got a blank check, you can't shrink government. If you can't shrink government, you can't live free.
Amen. It really is infuriating listening to a lot of these lawmakers talk about this. It's so frustrating. And the fact that they, you said 1,400 pages they're supposed to go over, and this is nitty-gritty stuff. This isn't some riveting storybook that you're getting, wow, I can't wait to turn the next page. I mean, this is, you'd have to sit there and really stare at it because you know that the tiniest little bit could have a huge impact.
I'm not name-dropping here. I was texting earlier with Congressman-elect Bob Onder. You're so used to calling him Senator Onder. Now Congressman-elect Bob Onder from the 3rd District. And I know how frustrated he's got to be over the whole thing. And he doesn't even get a vote on this. So he won't get sworn in till January 3rd. And then he can go up there and start raising a little bit of hell with them on some of these fiscal issues, for sure. Speaking of which, the St. Louis County Council's a mess. They had a committee meeting last night where some pretty scurrilous accusations were made about Sam Page. We're going to get to all that and more with County Councilman Mark Harder right after the...
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes 5 times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Break.
I received a phone call from someone on behalf of Dr. Page asking me to find dirt on Mike Archer.
Yeah, Melissa Price Smith, she's Governor Parsons' choice to be the St. Louis County prosecutor. She was at a committee of the whole meeting last night in the county, and that answer seemed to shock the room. Part of what she testified was that the county executive was trying to influence the Republican council candidate, Mike Archer's race, prior to the election by getting a sitting prosecutor, because she was already in the prosecutor's office, to dig up dirt on him politically so they could try to prevent him from winning that seat. I mean, shocking stuff. And Councilman Mark Harder is the one that brought all that up and asked her that question to begin with. So, Mark, welcome into the show.
Hey, Mark and Kim, how are you? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. You know, I was watching this I started watching it live, and then I backed up and listened to some of this key testimony, particularly from Melissa Price Smith. Did you know about that already?
No, we had caught rumors of it, and so we wanted to verify it. Ms. Smith actually brought it up ahead of, I think, any of us were ready to question at that point. And it was a shocker. I mean, you could hear and feel the air leave the room when it happened last night. And there's a lot of interesting interview questions and answers that came out of that meeting last night. So if anybody wants to go back and listen to it, it's on Boxcast on our county website. And it's about 2.5 hours of testimony from these two prosecuting attorney candidates. And I think you'll learn more about these two people in 2 hours than you'd ever learn in, 2 or 3 months of a campaign.
It's true. And here's the other thing. The other shocking thing is we're normally only used to hearing about what our county executives really think when there's a wiretap.
Yeah. Yeah.
But last night, what was Sam Page's reaction to that? I know he was sitting there. Did anybody ask him, Mr. Page, is this true? Were you trying to dig up dirt prior to the election by using the prosecutor's office on a Republican candidate, Mike Archer?
Well, actually, he wasn't for this segment. We had already adjourned our council meeting, which was earlier in the day, which ran up almost against this meeting. And we adjourned from the normal council meeting so that we could do this meeting on this specific topic. So, no, he was not there at the time, and I wish he was. I would have loved to have asked that question.
So my understanding is if the judge sides with Sam Page and says you get to choose Wesley Bell's replacement rather than Governor Mike Parson, then the council would still have to sign off on that decision. But then last night you guys rejected his pick, who's Court Van Oostrin. Do I have that correct? Because what happens then if the judge sides with Page, because you guys have already said no to his choice?
Well, a couple things probably will happen is that either Page will ignore us, which isn't too different than the past, or he will find another candidate that he could bring before the council, which we hope he does if it ends up that way. So it can go those two ways at this point. But after the vote we gave last night, I would think that he would want to distance himself from his candidate at this point.
Well, the problem for and I'm not feeling too much sympathy for Court Van Oostrin, but the dude already quit his federal prosecutor's job because he was so sure he was going to get this one. He's basically unemployed now.
Yeah, and I would imagine if he is as good as he says he is, they'll probably rehire him. I'm not too worried about that. But at this point, yes, it seemed to be presumptuous that he would quit a prosecutor's job in the federal system because he thought he was a shoo-in for this position. So that's unfortunate on his part and probably a bad miscalculation, but that's the way these things go. And he had to, under the Hatch Act, he can't aggressively seek another office, especially it's a political office, and be employed as a government employee. So I question him on that and whether he actually violated that in the interim in November between him campaigning for this, you know, in the shadows and actually being named by Page as his candidate. So he said he did not violate the Hatch Act. I think there's probably some gray area there. And probably needs somebody in the media to look into.
Yeah, well, hopefully they will. I know a lot of the media covered the committee meeting last night, as long as it was. I'm glad I tuned in when I did and picked up some of that stuff. It just makes you shake your head. You know there's some dirty stuff in politics sometimes, but when you hear somebody admit it, I wonder if, do you suspect Melissa Price-Smith knows the name of who called her and just didn't want to tell you last night?
I would imagine she would. I don't think she would make this up. And like I say, I questioned her on it. She did not give up her source. I was trying to find out if it was somebody in this administration or outside the administration. I think it might be somebody on the outside that was calling on behalf of Sam Page. So I don't know who that's going to be, and hopefully some good reporter can find that out.
Let's hope so. Mark Carter, thank you, my friend. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Yep, talk to you soon. We're going to be back with the Taylor Riggs from the Big Money Show on Fox Business. Stay tuned.
Question here. How are you thinking about the November meeting?
So, a couple things. One, we have two employment reports and an inflation report coming in. So the main thing will be to look, when we get to that meeting, at the totality of the data, and we'll be looking at the activity data, the unemployment data, and the inflation data, and asking ourselves, is our policy stance in the place where it needs to be?
Yeah, that's Jerome Powell, the Fed chair. If that gives you a headache, I'm right there with you. This was back in September when he was looking ahead to November. And he said at the time, if the economy's performing as expected, that would mean two more rate cuts this year. So you got the one in November. The question is, do they do it again today? I guess so. We'll find out. And we've got none other than Taylor Riggs on the phone of the Big Money Show on Fox Business Network. Taylor, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So where do you think Jerome Powell's head is today?
You know, this is a really tight spot. I think that they will end up cutting, but I actually don't think that the data warrants it. Inflation is not under control. We've talked a lot about this, that you shouldn't be cutting when we just had last week a CPI and a PPI report. That's wholesale prices that then filter into consumer prices. Those have stabilized at best, creeping up in the last 3 months at worst. So I actually don't think from an inflation standpoint we should be cutting. I think he will because he's telegraphed that he will. But then I think next year we're going to have to be very serious about taking a big pause and then reevaluating where we are. I think the labor market's also a different story. I mean, we talked about how consumers feel like they're really struggling, that the labor market doesn't feel good. And yet you've had since the election all of this optimism come back. You've had one of the biggest increases ever in the way small businesses feel. So I actually would be okay if we warranted just a pause to reassess everything else that's going on. But I think he will cut today because that's what he's telegraphed. And then we're really going to have to see next year if we pause and sort of how we're thinking about the cuts going forward.
I know people that just bought a house who are hoping mortgage rates are going to drop here at some point. Yeah. But that it's gone the opposite way since the last cut.
This is incredible. And I'm not sure if I've ever seen this in my career. We know that when the Fed telegraphs cuts, rates usually fall in anticipation of
yes,
that.
Yes.
And we saw that multiple months ago when he was telegraphing that big jumbo 50 basis point cut, rates fell. And then when he actually did cut, rates didn't fall further. But I have never seen them rise. And so you have this bond market, and I don't want to get too technical here, but sort of revolting against the Federal Reserve and saying, you can't cut in this environment, and we are revolting against you and forcing your hand. So I think it'll be really interesting to see how the bond market responds. But I've never seen in my lifetime a bond market go totally against what the Federal Reserve is telegraphing. I unfortunately don't think there's a lot of relief for homeowners or future homeowners anytime soon. I'm not sure we're ever getting back, at least in the next year that I can see, barring some massive recession, which I also don't want to root for.
No.
I don't see us getting anywhere back down to the, 3-4% levels. I think Freddie Mac, we're still at a 6.5-7% on an average 30-year fix.
Isn't that what we all love to hear, that we may never go back to that? All of us hoping, if we're not in the market for a new house, we're certainly hoping we can refinance and get rid of the high interest that we have right now. I have to ask you, Taylor, about what we talked about on the show the other day, this, I guess, joke crypto called Fartcoin. Apparently, people are investing in it like crazy. And I know we talked about Bitcoin and that was hitting record highs, but I just cannot wrap my brain around the fact that people are investing so much money in something called Fartcoin. Have you heard of this?
So, I actually have not. And this is why, how do I say this nicely? This sometimes is the irrational exuberance.
Yes.
When you have a Fed cutting, despite some of what the data says, this is mass speculation in the market. This is why I get worried about bubbles. And this is what happened. Remember during Ben Bernanke, Janet Yellen, when rates were at zero and everyone just buys, everything is worth much more when you're cutting rates. I don't think, again, the coin that you pointed out is always necessarily the Federal Reserve's fault. But it makes me a little nervous about the mass speculation going on instead of investing in real assets that are making money.
Right.
So you're suggesting people were putting their money on hot air here?
Okay, we knew you'd have to make a pun.
Nice. Not bad for 8:30 in the morning.
Taylor, this article says Fartcoin's market cap of nearly $800 million now exceeds that of several well-known brands, including Office Depot, Guess, Ethan Allen, and ZipRecruiter.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I mean, so again, I always remind your viewers on this program, one thing I love about America, I love capitalism, I love risk taking, I love betting on your future.
Yes.
But you have to bet on something that is worthwhile. Otherwise, it is just gambling. And if you want to gamble, that's fine. But if you want to invest and make money, I'm actually not opposed to Bitcoin or Ethereum, where we really sort of are starting to understand the underlying blockchain technology, but I only put in Bitcoin or Ethereum what I'm willing to lose completely. Otherwise, it feels a little bit too risky. So throw in something that you're willing to lose 1,000%. If you make money, great. And if you lose it all, you can't complain. Otherwise, I love, just the equity markets where most of them are backed by, you know, strong companies that are making products and making goods.
Yeah, you can get plenty of indigestion in the regular market. You don't have to worry about that particular one.
How Your long did you think of that one, Mark?
Go look up this.
Well,
story.
You two were talking, so I had some. I had a few minutes to ponder over here what I was.
It's like
say
it's like when someone said something to you and you don't think of the perfect the comeback until 5 minutes later, and you want to walk back to that person and say it.
That wasn't that bad. Come on, Kim.
No, it was actually pretty good.
It's amazing. Props. It is. So Taylor, to get you off this uncomfortable subject, I played a bite with Mike Johnson this morning talking about the CR, which they're going to pass, I'm sure, even if they have to do it with Democrat support. But it's more like an omnibus because they're adding, just a minor $200 billion in costs.
Yes. So when I'm thinking about what impacts the market, and tell me if I'm not talking about what you're talking about, but I'm thinking about they've debated whether we're doing a border bill or a tax cut bill. And they've talked a lot about doing two reconciliation bills.
Yes.
We've talked to a lot of senators and congressmen, and they seem to think that there is hope out there that you can still do two reconciliation bills in 1 year. Let me break it to you. It's never happened.
Mm-hmm.
We have never, ever, ever been able to do two reconciliation bills. So if you start with border, you're taking what my lovely friend Larry Kudlow is calling massive Russian roulette with the tax extension bill. Mm-hmm. You do not want those tax increases to expire at the end of next year because we couldn't get it together. So a lot of people are talking about grouping them into one reconciliation bill and doing border and taxes together. Ultimately, it's going to be up to Trump. You know, he's going to be the big guy in the room who's going to come out and lay out the order of which he wants to do things. But I think we need to be reminded of what Americans voted on during the election. It was take home pay after inflation needs to rise. People need to feel like they're making money again. And I think that has to do with blue collar jobs. I think it has to do with tax cuts. And growing the economy. A border, though, is number two, and it is there. And so I think we're going to have a really interesting session once we get to January 20. How do we figure out the order of things and how we do them? And then I think to your point, adding in massive spending bills, make sure DOGE comes in and does a full sweep and make sure that we're also keeping track of our spending.
Well, I tell you, we appreciate the way you explain all this, Taylor. Appreciate having you as part of the show, and I hope you have a Merry Christmas, you and the little one and your husband this year.
Thank you. Merry Christmas to you both.
Yep. Take care of yourself. I love getting her on here. Running marathons, having babies, explaining, you know, complex economic issues like it's nothing.
But that's really what it takes to be able to explain stuff going on in the market, because it's in the financial world, for me at least, it gets very confusing.
Oh, yeah, it's insane is what it is. None of it makes any sense. Sort of like abolishing the Electoral College. You know, there's a call for that again. And Dick Durbin is one of them from right over here in Illinois. It's incredible. We'll get into that here a little bit in just a minute. We'll be right back. We just determined from a text I got that there are coins out there with names we cannot even say on the radio.
But this is your son telling you this.
But he swears it's real.
He is very involved in the financial world, right?
Yes, and he swears to God there's some out there with names that you cannot repeat on the radio. I guess I'm not surprised.
Well, they're all toilet coins.
Okay, here's what I'll
they're
say.
They're all toilet coins.
That's where you're throwing your money.
I'm not going to say the name on the air, but I did just Google it, and there were results.
I know. It's amazing to me, people. It must be people with just expendable money, and they got more money than they got sense, is all I can figure. So I have to tell you this. I was having a confidential conversation the other day with somebody who's in the know. This individual told me that the subject came back around to January 6th, because now there's a discussion as to whether or not Liz Cheney should possibly face charges for what she did on that J6 committee. And the individual I'm talking to knows people in the FBI and knows people who are Capitol Police officers and all of this stuff. And that at some point in the last 4 years, after January 6th happened, When it became obvious, as we were telling you repeatedly over and over and over again, that the Biden Justice Department was persecuting for political purposes, it's political opponents. And anybody who was at the Save the Steel rally in Washington that day was considered a political opponent of the Biden administration, obviously of the left, of the establishment. And that at some point in the ensuing years, now obviously it was pretty obvious to everybody that although they had some sense it was coming, they didn't prepare for it adequately. They sort of let it happen because you've seen the video of doors being opened and people being allowed in. There was some violence. And it was pretty obvious immediately that those people that committed acts of violence against police officers were going to face charges for those activities. We're talking a handful of people, 50 people maybe, that committed the serious offenses. The other people are the ones that you saw on the videotape that Tucker Carlson released walking through the Capitol building, right? Like they were on vacation, didn't harm anything. Those people were still targeted by the prosecutors. And the story that was related to me was that some of these senior FBI officials who were investigating this, some of these FBI officials went to the Department of Justice and said, we're all in on investigating all these folks that committed violence. But come on, the other folks that walked in, maybe they were trespassing. But nothing, nothing more serious than that. And they were told straight to their face, we're going after all of them, and if we can get 20 years on them, we will. It was an intentional persecution by the Biden Department of Justice. I've said it before. I was there that day. That's not what it was. That's not what the event was. It was supposed to be a rally with speakers outside of the Capitol building so that the legislators would know we were all out there and we wanted to make sure they investigated voter fraud. That's all that any of those rallies ever were supposed to be. But there were people who went there with the intention of disrupting, and they did. And since then, several thousand people have been charged and many sentenced to long jail sentences by the Biden Department of Justice. That's what needs to be rectified when Donald Trump takes office. Anybody that wasn't convicted of a violent offense, or if the charges were trumped up against them with something that shouldn't have been more than trespassing, those are the people that need to be pardoned or given clemency by Donald J. Trump and his administration. And hopefully that happens right off the bat. What I heard yesterday just confirmed for me what I already knew and suspected. But this is somebody with direct knowledge of what those talks were like. And this is why you need a Kash Patel to go to the top of the FBI and clean house. And you need somebody to go in the DOJ and clean house. You've got to get people out of there who are hardened lifers, who are all part of the establishment, the leftist establishment, who would have had anything to do with any of those decisions. So hopefully that happens. Let's keep our fingers crossed that Pam Bondi and Kash Patel get that done. By the way, Kathy Hochul, the governor of New York, the latest one to call for the abolition of the Electoral College. Now, when these morons do this every few years, normally they do it after, for example, somebody wins the Electoral College, but they lose the popular vote. And then they come out and make the argument, well, that's not fair. That you were disenfranchising people. Everybody's vote should count. These are people that can't see past the end of their crooked noses, that our founders put this in place for a reason, to make sure that the population centers of the country didn't control all of the politics, that states in the middle of the country and flyover country had some say in the direction of the country, to keep the peace. And it's worked for 240 some years. And Dick Durbin was one of the ones that came out last week. I don't even know what they're trying to gin up here in bringing this up again right now. They don't have the White House. They don't have the Senate or the House. So, you know, this is getting absolutely nowhere. But a lot of people are talking about it again. And it's a conversation worth educating yourself on so you can set them straight if you're in a bar and it comes up. Refer them back to this podcast and I'll straighten them out.
That argument will never end. People will always call for the abolishing of the Electoral
You're
College.
It's a representative republic. It is not a direct democracy when it comes to electing the leader of 50 states, individual states. That's the way it's got to be. All right. going to do it for us. Brian Kilmeade coming up. You got Annie Fry, Mark Reardon in a little later today. Happy birthday,
Happy birthday, Kim.
Thank you, guys.
We hope you have a great day. We really do. We'll see you tomorrow morning at 5 a.m.
Get more at 971talk.com.